Welcome to today's reading of the San Angelo Standard Times, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael. I'm reading the San Angelo Standard Times for the week of Sunday, September 27th, 2020. I'm doing the readings on Thursday, October 1st. I'll start with the most recent articles first, and I'll give the publication date of each article we read. COVID-19 update. Tom Green County, September 30th, City of San Angelo. 3,740 positive cases reported. 17 currently hospitalized. 22 new positive cases. 75 deaths. 54 Tom Green County residents. 21 out-of-county residents. The following figures were as of Wednesday. 168 active cases, 27,258 total tests, 100 pending tests, 17,313 negative tests, 537 total hospitalizations, 2 patients in ICU with COVID-19. Debate Watch Parties Held in San Angelo by Colin Murphy, published Thursday, September 30th. Approximately 50 people attended a watch party for the first presidential debate at the Concho Pearl Ice House restaurant in San Angelo on Tuesday night. Those in attendance witnessed a contentious debate between GOP candidate President Donald Trump and Democratic candidate former Vice President Joe Biden. The debate watch party was held by the San Angelo Republican Women Group, but was open to the public. Kelly Duncan, president of the San Angelo Republican Women, said everyone, regardless of their political affiliation, was welcome to attend the event. "This was open to the public," Duncan said. "This was for all Republicans or Democrats. We have a table of libertarians here participating. We wanted everyone to come and hear this and enjoy this and show camaraderie. This is San Angelo. Everyone gets along here. These are our neighbors. We are all San Angeloans. We are all Texans, and we are all Americans, and this is part of the political process." San Angelo man gets 30 years for stripes robbery after return of in-person jury trial. By John Tufts, published September 30th. Sterling City. A San Angelo man was sentenced to 30 years in a state penitentiary after being found guilty of firing a gun inside a Sterling City convenience store during an aggravated robbery last year. The man was sentenced in what officials said was one of the first in-person jury trials in the state since the Supreme Court of Texas imposed restrictions on jury gatherings due to COVID-19, according to a news release. In July 2019, Stephen Clifford, 24, discharged a firearm inside a Stripes convenience store and threatened an employee into giving him the contents of the cash register, according to the release. Officials said Clifford robbed a Midland hotel roughly an hour before robbing the convenience store in Sterling City. On September 21, 2020, 51st District Court Judge Carmen Dusek began Clifford's trial under a set of guidelines officials said would satisfy the restrictions currently imposed on Texas courts amid the global pandemic. The judge developed and implemented a plan that ensured public health and safety, carefully observed the constitutional rights of the accused, and still enabled the criminal justice system to function, the release stated. To prepare for Clifford's trial, Judge Dusek worked along Sterling County Judge Debbie Horwood and other court personnel, which included District Clerk Jerry McCutcheon, Sterling County Sheriff Tim Sanders, and other Sterling County employees and officials, according to the release. 51st District Attorney Allison Palmer expressed her appreciation toward officials who she stated worked long hours to bring back in-person jury trials in the wake of COVID-19. Palmer, together with Assistant District Attorney Ashley Knight, presented additional evidence to Sterling City jurors of Clifford's prior criminal record, which included assault, according to the release. The jury sentenced Clifford to 30 years confinement in a state penitentiary. Tom Green County seeing huge increase in mail-in ballot requests. Get yours in by deadline. By John Tufts, published September 30th. As the November election draws closer, Tom Green County Elections Administrator Vonna Hudson is urging residents not to wait much longer if they decide to request a ballot by mail. "We're seeing a huge increase in volume for mail-in ballots," Hudson said. "The application deadline is October 23rd. We're cautioning people not to wait anywhere near that long." Hudson said the mail-in ballot application form must be received, not postmarked, by October 23rd. The form can be delivered to election officials in person by the voter only. The post office is saying first-class mail can take between 2 to 5 days, and once early voting starts, October 13th, they can't walk it into our office. They have to mail it. So people need to make sure that they are providing sufficient time to get the application in and for us to get a ballot to them, she said. Who can qualify for a ballot by mail? To qualify for a mail-in ballot, Tom Green County residents can be any of the following: age 65 or older, on disability, have an expected absence from Tom Green County. You must be out of the county during early voting and on election day. The ballot must be mailed from out of Tom Green County. Confined in jail. Where can I get a mail-in ballot application? Registered voters can pick up the application form on the first floor of the Ed B. and Francis Frank Keyes Building, 113 West Beauregard Street. Those who wish to submit a mail-in ballot can also download the application online by visiting tomgreencounty.tx.gov/page/ELE.forms. They need to be sure that they complete the application form, Hudson said. They need to give us their residence address and their mailing address if it's different, and why they are applying. That'll help process things a lot quicker if we get all of that information from the get-go. Can I drop off my mail-in ballot to officials in person? Tom Green County residents who receive a ballot by mail can submit their vote to election officials either by mail, or they can bring in their ballot to the election office, 133 West Beauregard Street. Voters who choose to drop off their ballot in person at the election office must be prepared to show ID. What if I change my mind and want to vote on election day? Officials said residents who change their mind about voting by mail should take their mail-in ballot with them on November 3rd and surrender it to election officials at their polling location. Tom Green County residents will be required to cancel their mail-in ballot. Officials stated if residents do not have the ballot with them on election day, they will have to vote provisionally. Here's another related story. 2020 election, Tom Green County voter guide includes dates, poll locations, candidates, and more. Published September 30th. The 2020 elections are nearly here. According to Tom Green County Elections Administrator Vonna Hudson, there are currently 69,133 voters registered locally as of September 29th. During the 2018 midterm election cycle, voter turnout in the county was high, with 54% of registered voters, 35,022, making it to the polls, and 33% opting to vote early. Here's a breakdown of the information you need to cast your ballot in Tom Green County. Am I registered to vote? You can check if you're registered to vote at the Texas Secretary of State website at temvp.sos.texas.gov/mvp/mvp.do. Note the site will ask to verify information such as name, date of birth, and county of residence. Important election dates. Last day to register to vote, Monday, October 5th. Last day to apply for ballot by mail, Friday, October 23rd, received, not postmarked. First day of in-person early voting, Tuesday, October 13th. Last day of in-person early voting, Friday, October 30th. Last day to receive ballot by mail. 7 p.m. Tuesday, November 3rd, Election Day, if carrier envelope is not postmarked. Or 5 p.m. Wednesday, November 4th, next business day after Election Day, if carrier envelope is postmarked by 7 p.m. at the location of the election on Election Day, unless overseas or military voter deadlines apply. Casting your ballot. Early in-person voting begins October 13th and is available at the Elections Office on the first floor of the Keys Building, 113 West Beauregard Avenue, and at the Tom Green County Jail, Sallyport, 122 West Harris Avenue, during the following times. October 13th through 16th, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. October 19th through the 23rd, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. October 24th, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. October 25th, 12:30 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. October 26th through the 30th, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Curbside is available at both early voting locations. Enter Sallyport from North Irving Street. Paper ballots are only available during early voting. Election Day voting hours and locations. Voting will be available from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. at these locations Tuesday, November 3rd. Curbside is available at these voting locations. Angelo Bible Church, 3506 Sherwood Way. Belmore Baptist Church, 1214 South Bell Street. Calvary Baptist Church, 2401 Armstrong Street. Celebration Church, 2639 Sunset Drive. Christoval Community Center, 20022 Main Street, Christoval. Concho Valley Transit District Depot, 506 North Chadburn Street. Gandhi Inc. and Livestock Barn, 4620 Grape Creek Road. Grape Creek Baptist Church, 9781 Grape Creek Road. MHMR Administration Building, 1501 West Beauregard Avenue. Paul Ann Baptist Church, 2531 Smith Boulevard. Plaza del Sol, 2 Apartments, 4359 Oak Grove Boulevard. SAF Assembly of God, 1442 Edmund Boulevard. Southgate Church of Christ, 528 Country Club Road. Southside Recreation Center, 2750 Ben Ficklin Road. St. Ambrose Catholic Church and Wall, 8602 Loop 570. Station 618, 618 Chadburn Street. Trinity Lutheran, 3536 Lutheran Way. TxDOT Headquarters, 4502 Knickerbocker Road, Building E. Very Best Baptist Church, 50 Farm to Market Road, 2334, Very Best. Wesley Trinity United Methodist, 301 West 18th Street. Texas Voter ID Requirements. Texas is one of 31 states that require photo identification when voting. Acceptable IDs include Texas Driver License by the Texas Department of Public Safety, DPS. Texas Election Identification Certificate issued by DPS. Texas Personal Identification Card issued by DPS. Texas License to Carry a Handgun issued by DPS. U.S. Military Identification Card containing the person's photograph. U.S. Citizenship Certificate containing the person's photograph. U.S. Passport. Registered voters who can't meet any of the photo ID requirements can still vote by signing a declaration stating their identity and that they have a reasonable impediment or difficulty for having an accepted photo ID. They must also provide one of the following documents: valid voter registration certificate, certified birth certificate, must be an original, copy of or original current utility bill, copy of or original bank statement, copy of or original government check, copy of or original paycheck, copy of or original government document with their name and an address. Original required if it contains a photograph. If you have questions about your voter registration status or acceptable forms of ID, call the elections office at 325-659-6541. Who's on the ballot? A look at the opposed races. President, Vice President, Donald J. Trump, Michael R. Pence, Republican. Joseph R. Biden, Kamala D. Harris, Democrat. Joe Jorgensen, Jeremy Spike Cohen, Libertarian. Howie Hawkins, Angela Walker, Green Party. United States Senator, John Cornyn, Republican. Mary J. M. Hagar, Democrat. Kerry Douglas McKinnon, Libertarian. David B. Collins, Green Party. United States Representative, District 11. August Pfluger, Republican. John Mark Hogg, Democrat. Wasey Alpha Cody, Libertarian. Railroad Commissioner, James Jim Wright, Republican. Krista Castaneda, Democrat. Matt Starrett, Libertarian. Katja Kat Green, Green Party. Chief Justice, Supreme Court of Texas, Nathan Hecht, Republican. Amy Clark Meacham, Democrat. Mark Ash, Libertarian. Justice, Supreme Court of Texas, Place 6, unexpired term. Jane Bland, Republican. Kathy Cheng, Democrat. Justice, Supreme Court of Texas, Place 7. Jeff Boyd, Republican. Stacey Williams, Democrat. William Bryan Strange III, Libertarian. Justice, Supreme Court of Texas, Place 8. Brett Busby, Republican. Gisela D. Triana, Democrat. Tom Oxford, Libertarian. Judge Court of Criminal Appeals, Place 3. Burt Richardson, Republican. Elizabeth Davis Frizzell, Democrat. Judge Court of Criminal Appeals, Place 4. Kevin Patrick Yeary, Republican. Tina Clinton, Democrat. Judge Court of Criminal Appeals, Place 9. David Newell, Republican. Brandon Birmingham, Democrat. Member State Board of Education, District 15. Jay Johnson, Republican. John Betancourt, Democrat. Chief Justice, 3rd Court of Appeals District. Jeff Rose, Republican. Darlene Byrne, Democrat. Cristobal ISD Board of Trustees. Vote for none, 1, 2, or 3. Philip Kemp. Sarah Leggett. Mitch Wilkerson. Chase Hoard. Jessica Harlan. Very Best ISD Board of Trustees. Vote for none, 1, 2, or 3. Delana Freeman. Jerry Breeding. Joel Hoffman. Thad Martin. Wall ISD Board of Trustees. Vote for none, 1, 2, or 3. Cole Mikulik. Kurt Braden. Raymond Taylor. Heather Braden. Doug Dusek. Larry Holscher. Water Valley ISD Board of Trustees. Vote for none, 1, 2, or 3. Stanley Treadaway. Jennifer Weiss. Charles Chuck Haller. David Crawford. Kitna Foltz. Clay Lang. T.J. Sexton. San Angelo featured in Western Art and Architecture magazine by Linda Thorson Bond, special to the San Angelo Standard Times, published September 29th. San Angelo is featured in the October-November issue of Western Art and Architecture magazine In the Wandering section of the National Magazine, the six-page story describes Fort Concho, the San Angelo Museum of Fine Arts, the Visitor's Center, downtown businesses and historic buildings, Paintbrush Alley, the new Pop Art Museum, the International Water Lily Collection, the Chicken Farm Arts Center, and Angelo State University. Off the beaten path attractions included are the Pictographs near Paint Rock, Cristoval Vineyards, and the Mount Carmel Hermitage Monastery. Of particular interest to the magazine's readers is one of San Angelo's earliest architects, Oscar Ruffini. 44 area attractions, restaurants, shops, and place to stay are listed in a sidebar. The story coincides with the In Plein Air, Texas, the annual event that brings artists to the San Angelo area for the International Juried Competition. This year, artists were selected from 26 states and 4 continents. Artists who come to San Angelo may spend the day at the San Angelo Fairgrounds painting the top 30 roping cowboys in the world, along with youth showing their prize goats and lambs at a junior livestock show. During the week, they are invited to historic private ranches to spend the day and paint as well as be welcomed by the ranchers themselves with their West Texas hospitality. The community and visitors alike have embraced the artists, housing them in their homes and helping sales of their artwork to average over $200,000 each of the past 5 years. Artists donate back a sizable portion of every sale, supporting the San Angelo Museum of Fine Arts children's education programs. All artists, hosts, and volunteers will follow COVID-19 restrictions and instructions. The story is written by Linda Thorson Bond and Barbara Rollo. Bond writes for magazines, newspapers, and television. Her historical novel, Saving the Oldest Town in Texas, and newest book, San Angelo A to Z, A Young Reader's Guide, are available on Amazon.com and at bookstores. Rollo, a native San Angeloan, is deeply immersed in the history and culture of the region. As an artist and arts enthusiast, she coordinates In Plein Air, Texas, and works to engage the next generation in the future of the city. Photos in the magazine are by Charles Luker, Susan Brooks, Bruce R. Partain, Tim Vasquez, Kenneth Thompson, Barbara Rollo, and John Austerhout. City of San Angelo offers tips and guidance for Halloween 2020. Here's what you should know. By Rosanna Aguilera, published September 29th. The City of San Angelo has offered guidance for Halloween 2020 concerning trick-or-treating, haunted houses, and CDC's tips to stay safe. Trick-or-treating. We want everyone to have a spooktacular time this Halloween, but we also need to ensure everyone's help to ensure we all stay safe while having fun, the news release stated. The city reminds everyone that they do not schedule times or dates for Halloween or trick-or-treating. It is up to each individual. If you do go trick-or-treating, then we ask that everyone wear a mask, remember to practice social distancing from people who are not from your immediate household, and make sure you wash your hands once you get home, according to the release. If anyone is sick or not feeling well, they are advised to stay home. The CDC recommends one-way trick-or-treating, in which individually wrapped goodie bags are lined up for families to grab and go while continuing to social distance, such as at the end of a driveway or at the edge of a yard. You could also have a container of candy available with hand sanitizer next to it for trick-or-treaters to use once they have finished stopping by your house. Gatherings. For large outdoor events with more than 10 people expected, organizers need to submit a plan to the city for approval by the county judge, mayor, or local health authority. Plans should be submitted to the health department at sandra.villarreal@cosatx.us. All individuals must wear a face covering over the nose and mouth whenever it is not feasible to maintain social distancing from others, the release states. Haunted houses. Prior to utilizing any structure for the purposes of a haunted house, The owner-operator should contact the San Angelo Permits Office at 325-657-4210 and make sure that the building can be permitted and is properly zoned for the use of a special amusement building. A temporary certificate of occupancy, TCO, may be issued by the permits office. However, all requirements in the fire code must be met. Once allowed, the largest issue that comes up when performing inspections on special amusement buildings, such as haunted houses, is that they most often require fire protection systems. Some of the main issues encountered in these occupancies include a lack of fire alarm notification, sprinkler systems, and exit signs, the release states. Guidance from the CDC for Halloween. Many traditional Halloween activities can be high risk for spreading viruses, according to the release. There are several safer alternative ways to participate in Halloween. Lower risk activities. Carving or decorating pumpkins with members of your household and displaying them. Carving or decorating pumpkins outside at a safe distance with neighbors or friends. Decorating your house, apartment, or living space. Doing a Halloween scavenger hunt, where children are given lists of Halloween-themed things to look for while they walk outdoors from house to house, admiring Halloween decorations at a distance. Having a virtual Halloween costume contest. Having a Halloween movie night with people you live with. Having a scavenger hunt-style trick-or-treat search with your household members in or around your home, rather than going house to house. Moderate risk activities. Participating in one-way trick-or-treating, where individually wrapped goodie bags are lined up for families to grab and go, while continuing to social distance, such as at the end of a driveway or at the edge of a yard. If you are preparing goodie bags, wash your hands with soap and water for at least 20 seconds before and after preparing the bags. Having a small group outdoor open-air costume parade where people are distanced more than 6 feet apart. Attending a costume party held outdoors where protective masks are used and people can remain more than 6 feet apart. A costume mask, such as for Halloween, is not a substitute for a cloth mask. A costume mask should not be used unless it is made of two or more layers of breathable fabric that covers the mouth and nose and doesn't leave gaps around the face. Do not wear a costume mask over a protective cloth mask because it can be dangerous if the costume mask makes it hard to breathe. Instead, consider using a Halloween-themed cloth mask. Going to an open-air, one-way walk-through haunted house where appropriate mask use is enforced, and people can remain more than 6 feet apart. If screaming will likely occur, greater distancing is advised. The greater the distance, the lower the risk of spreading a respiratory virus. Visiting pumpkin patches or orchards, where people use hand sanitizer before touching pumpkins or picking apples. Wearing masks is encouraged or enforced, and people are able to maintain social distancing. Having an outdoor Halloween movie night with local family friends with people spaced at least 6 feet apart. If screaming will likely occur, greater distancing is advised. The greater the distance, the lower the risk of spreading a respiratory virus. Lower your risk by following CDC's recommendations on hosting gatherings or cookouts. Higher risk activities. Avoid these higher risk activities to help prevent the spread of the virus. Participating in traditional trick-or-treating where treats are handed to children who go door-to-door. Having trunk or treat where treats are handed out from trunks of cars lined up in large parking lots. Attending crowded costume parties held indoors. Going to an indoor haunted house where people may be crowded together and screaming. Going on hay rides or tractor rides with people who are not in your household. Using alcohol or drugs, which can cloud judgment and increase risky behaviors. Traveling to a rural fall festival that is not in your community if you live in an area with community spread of COVID-19. San Angelo police seized 2.5 pounds of meth and over $22,000 and 3 guns. By Rosanna Aguilera. Published September 29th. San Angelo police seized 2.5 pounds of meth, over $22,000, and 3 guns during a drug operations, according to a news release. On Monday, September 28th, investigators with the San Angelo Police Department's Street Crimes Division obtained arrest and search warrants for a San Angelo man believed to be trafficking narcotics from his residence, the release stated. The warrants, issued by Justice of the Peace Susan Werner, named 22-year-old Anthony Durst to be in possession of narcotics at a residence located in the 5400 block of Ben Ficklin Road. Durst was located and detained during a traffic stop just prior to the execution of the search warrant, according to the release. Officers seized about 2.5 pounds of suspected methamphetamine, approximately $22,500, 3 firearms, and body armor during the stop. Durst and a female companion, identified as 22-year-old Paulina Viscano, have been charged with first-degree felony manufacture delivery of controlled substance, the release stated. Additional charges may be added pending to the outcome of this ongoing investigation. The department's patrol division and the Center for Tactical Medicine assisted with the operation. Circle S Corn Maze and Pumpkin Patch in Wall set to open for 2020 fall season. By Rosanna Aguilera. Published September 29th. The Circle S Acres Corn Maze and Pumpkin Patch will open its fall season Wednesday, September 30th. This is the 5th year for the festive destination about 12 miles southeast of San Angelo at 7305 Bean Road in Wall. Its feature attraction is a maze that winds through 4 acres of corn. In August, Circle S revealed its design for the 2020 season, which honors first responders and medical staff. Circle S will be closed Monday and Tuesday and open from 5 to 8 p.m. Wednesday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. Saturday, and 1 to 6 on Sunday. Its last day of the season will be November 1st. Costs for the corn maze are $8 for adults, $5 for children, and children 2 and younger are free. The property entry is free. Apart from the corn maze, the festive destination has other activities to get anyone into the fall spirit. The pumpkin patch has more than 30 varieties of pumpkins available that come from Floydada. Prices on the pumpkins range from $1 to $15. Smaller activities also include a corn cannon, barrel train, playground, wall ball mazes, and pumpkin bowling. There is a new mural set up for a photo op created by San Angelo artist Kat Freeney. Here is a list of other Halloween and fall events to consider this year. October 3rd, the 33rd Annual Harvest Festival is at 8 p.m. on October 3rd at 4522 College Hills Boulevard at Sierra Vista United Methodist Church. There will be a garage sale from 8 a.m. to 12 p.m. Food sales will run from 10 a.m. to noon, selling brisket, chicken, and casseroles. The pumpkin patch will be open from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Please practice social distancing and wear a mask. For more, call 325-944-4041. October 9th, Parents Night Out Halloween Party is from 5 to 9 p.m. at 3516 Knickerbocker Road. Drop your children off to play games, have a dance party, and do an obstacle course while you take the night off. Dinner will be provided. The cost is $25 for the first child, and siblings can join for an additional $15. Minimum age for children is 5 years. For more information, call 325-949-1405. October 26th, Wall Oween is from 5 to 7 p.m. at 7305 Bean Road in Wall. Because the annual Halloween carnival had to be canceled, Wall PTO is partnering with Circle S Acres Corn Maze and Pumpkin Patch to host a fun Halloween night exclusively for Wall Hawk families. Admission is $10 per family. The country store will be set up for all your dessert needs and more. October 29th, Halloween at the Y is from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. along West River Drive near the YMCA, 353 South Randolph Street. Community leaders will provide a drive-through trick-or-treat experience. The event is free and open to the public. October 31st, the Grind Brew and Cafe will be hosting a free trick-or-treat event alongside other downtown businesses from 5 to 8 p.m. The path will run all through downtown, beginning at the Grind Brewing Cafe, 220 A North Chadburn Street. November 7th, annual Pumpkin Festival is from 10 a.m. to noon, Saturday, November 7th, at 3168 North U.S. Highway 67. There will be a giant pumpkin weigh-in, crafts and games, and a costume contest. There will be food demonstrations using fresh pumpkins and free hot dogs while supplies last. Masks will be required. The event is free and open to the public. San Angelo fatal hit-and-run victim identified. Driver still at large. Published September 29th. San Angelo police are searching for a hit-and-run driver who killed an 87-year-old man who was crossing the street in a motorized wheelchair Monday night, according to a news release. On Monday, September 28th, police were dispatched to Upton Street and North Schroeder Avenue just before 9 p.m. for the report of a major motor vehicle crash involving a pedestrian and an SUV. Upon arrival, officers discovered several bystanders assisting an unconscious elderly man who was lying in the roadway, the release stated. The man was transported by ambulance to a nearby hospital for treatment, but later succumbed to his injuries. The victim was identified as Jesse Hernandez. The preliminary investigation revealed that Hernandez was crossing the street on his motorized wheelchair when he was struck by a white, possibly 2010 to 2020 model, long, full-sized SUV. The SUV reportedly fled west on Upton before turning north on North Marie Street, according to the release. The SUV will most likely have significant front-end damage. Police are seeking surveillance footage along North Marie from Upton to La Follette from 8:15 to 9:15 p.m. Monday. Anyone with information about the driver or footage are encouraged to contact Detective C. Welch at 325-657-4315. A reward is being offered for information that leads to an arrest. Additional information will be released when it becomes available, the release stated. Tom Green County Sheriff's Office cancels trunk or treat night out events due to COVID, by Rosanna Aguilera, published September 28th. The Tom Green County Sheriff's Office has announced the cancellation of two popular events due to COVID-19, according to a Facebook post. Due to COVID-19 concerns, the Tom Green County Sheriff's Office will not be hosting the annual National Night Out event and have also canceled the Trunk or Treat Festival, normally held at the Sheriff's Office downtown. We look forward to hosting these events again in a healthy 2021, the Facebook post stated. Virginia man arrested after defective light uncovers Odessa to Eden human trafficking attempt, by Elena Edgen, published September 28th. A Virginia man has been arrested after a traffic stop near Sterling City led to the discovery of human trafficking between Odessa and Eden, according to an arrest affidavit. Around 6:30 a.m., Saturday, September 26th, a Sterling County Sheriff's deputy was 3 miles south of Sterling City. He noticed a black passenger vehicle with a Tennessee license plate with a defective plate light traveling south on U.S. Highway 87, according to the affidavit. The driver, who had a Virginia driver's license, stopped the vehicle and the deputy noticed 9 people inside. The driver appeared nervous and was sweating profusely, according to the affidavit. When asked who the passengers were, the driver said he did not know. He told the deputy he drove from Virginia to transport people from Odessa to Eden. the people were planning to work on tobacco farms, according to the affidavit. He stated he would be paid $2,000 for the delivery and $6,000 if he stayed the night after the delivery. The passengers did not have legal status in the U.S. Jason Keith Weddle, 41, was arrested in Sterling City on Saturday on suspicion of trafficking of persons. The Abingdon, Virginia man was brought to Tom Green County Detention Center, where he remained in lieu of a $15,000 bond as of 11:30 a.m. Monday, according to online jail records. The charge is a second-degree felony punishable by up to 20 years in jail and a fine not to exceed $10,000. Indictment. San Angelo mechanic took customer's pickup, returned with bullet holes. By Elena Edgen, published September 24th. A San Angelo mechanic has been indicted a year after a customer's vehicle was shot at during an early morning argument, according to an indictment released Wednesday. Around 3:30 a.m., September 14, 2019, police responded to a shots fired call in the 700 block of Hughes Street. Witnesses described a fight escalated, leading to a 12-gauge shotgun firing at a dark F-250. The pickup went into reverse, struck a house, and left, according to court documents. Hours later, the pickup's driver asked to meet with police at a convenience store on Chadburn Street. Police noted the pickup had bullet holes during the meeting. The driver stated the pickup belonged to a customer who had brought it in for air conditioning repair, record state. Jesus Romaldo Martinez III, 28, was arrested September 14, 2019, on suspicion of unauthorized use of a vehicle. He also had five warrants. Martinez was released from Tom Green County Detention Center the next day on a $10,000 bond. An indictment released in a Wednesday indictment report charged Martinez with unauthorized use of a vehicle. This is a state jail felony punishable by up to 2 years in jail. A court date has been tentatively set for 8:30 a.m. October 28, 2020, in the 51st District Court, according to online court records. Report states Big Spring man fell 80 to 100 feet while working on Cristobal wind turbine. By Elena Edgen, published September 23rd. Update. An incident report from the Tom Green County Sheriff's Office has revealed more details into the accidental falling death of Aaron Scott Johnson, 39. At about 8:21 p.m. Tuesday, Schleicher County deputies responded to the Langford Wind Power Farm. Johnson had been working on refurbishing a wind turbine when he fell 80 to 100 feet. He was identified by his license, according to the report. At 1 p.m., the wind farm employees were called for a walk down, a meeting to discuss what still needed repairs. Johnson's supervisor noted he was not at the meeting and could not reach him via phone. About 7 hours later, the supervisor began searching for him, according to the report. The supervisor found Johnson unconscious and not breathing on the second deck level. Two of Johnson's co-workers helped the supervisor bring Johnson's body to the ground level, record state. A Schleicher County assistant fire chief stated he was the first county official on scene and believed Johnson had been dead for several hours, according to the report. Johnson had significant head trauma and a left leg fracture. Indictment states El Dorado man used San Angelo company's credit card to make ends meet. By Elena Edgen, published September 24th. An El Dorado man has been indicted on four counts of using a San Angelo company's credit card, according to an indictment released Wednesday. On January 7, 2020, police spoke with a representative from Whitetail Rental Equipment, 4825 Cristobal Road. The representative reported an employee spent $12,917.17 on a company credit card without authorization when he was employed, according to an arrest affidavit. An officer remembered another case involving the employee appropriating items from a different employer, record state. The officer also reviewed text messages regarding the man, who said his reason for using the credit card was to try to make ends meet. Police contacted Walmart, which had video of the man purchasing items with the card. During an interview with police, the man told officers he made these purchases knowing it was wrong and not asking for help, according to the affidavit. He also mentioned an ongoing struggle with controlled substances as the main reason. Briley Wayne Ledbetter, 27, was arrested February 25, 2020, on suspicion of expired vehicle registration, failure to control speed collision with person or vehicle, failure to display driver's license, registration insignia wrong vehicle, theft of property less than $30,000, and 8 warrants. Ledbetter was released from Tom Green County Jail the following day on a $14,584 bond, according to online jail records. An indictment released in a Wednesday report charged Ledbetter with 4 counts of credit card abuse. The card, belonging to Whitetail Rental LLC, was used November 4th and 5th, December 2nd, and December 16th, according to the indictment. These charges are state jail felonies, punishable by up to 2 years in jail. A court date has not been set as of 11 a.m. Thursday, according to online court records. A Tale of Two Signs. Iconic San Angelo venue remains closed amid COVID-19 restrictions. By Colin Murphy, published September 26th. There are two signs in the front window at the House of Fifi Dubois, 123 South Chadburn Street. One reads, "Closed until further notice." The other, "Open Texas venues." In the case of this iconic venue for live music and entertainment in San Angelo, the signs tell the story of the impact of COVID-19 restrictions have had and the uncertain road ahead. Earlier this month, Governor Greg Abbott announced Texas restaurants could increase their occupancy levels to 75% capacity. Bars, however, must stay closed until further notice, leaving some business owners wondering when they could again open. The doors to the House of Fifi Dubois have been closed since June 22nd, according to co-owner Tony Hunter. Hunter is frustrated by the shutdown and concerned by what she says is a lack of representation on the governing bodies making decisions that impact her livelihood. The task force that the governor has, in my opinion, is made up of several business people, but we didn't elect them, Hunter said. I think our representatives and senators should be a part of that process so we are being represented in our districts. How does a task force of business people know what is going on in San Angelo, Texas? I don't understand why we are not being represented by the people we elected, she said. According to Hunter, lawmakers have lumped some businesses into one group as bars in applying COVID-19 restrictions. Hunter said that approach doesn't take into consideration the differences between each establishment. You have little neighborhood bars, your little dive bars and watering holes that are small, that may only seat 10 people, Hunter said. You have to look at the space. You can't just do a percentage across the board. Hunter said officials should determine occupancy by the actual venue size and see what establishment each establishment can accommodate with social distancing and other mandates. It will vary from space to space, and it may be viable for some to open their doors, she said. Hunter is also frustrated by what she said is a lack of access to information used by health officials who state bars spread COVID-19 at higher rates when compared to other businesses. Governor Abbott has maintained that bars are nationally recognized as COVID-spreading locations and that the case numbers need to be further contained before they can open. Abbott's office did not respond Friday to questions about what those metrics might be. Kristen Mundy, chief of the Infectious Disease Division in the University of Texas at Austin's Medical School, said there is increased risk in spreading the virus if strangers mingle in a tight, closed space, especially as drinking could cause bar customers to loosen their inhibitions. Hunter would prefer it if Texas bar owners like herself were more involved in those discussions. We still haven't seen the data, Hunter said. They just said that the Centers for Disease Control said that bars were dangerous. We have been shuttered without any time frame or any way to understand why. Even after we were shut down, we watched cases rise and rise and rise, so we were definitely not part of that equation, she said. Hunter said she had a message for legislators to consider for establishments like her own to change their window signs from closed until further notice to open for business. "We add color and character and care to our communities and our neighborhoods," Hunter said. "We are essential. We are real Texans that give back to our communities. We are real Texans that didn't do anything wrong. We are real Texans that put down our stakes. I'm really proud to be an American and a Texan. It's a sad time to be a Texan because we are not being allowed to live that dream that we worked so hard for. I believe there is a solution that protects the health of individuals and employees, as well as the health of our small businesses." For more information about the governor's order and COVID-19 restrictions can be found at www.tabc.texas.gov/coronavirus. City in Good Shape for Election Workers, published September 26th by John Tufts. Elections Administrator Vona Hudson said Tom Green County is seeing more mail-in ballot requests and said her office should have enough volunteers to handle the increased workload, even as other parts of Texas struggle to find enough poll workers by Election Day. "We're seeing a huge increase in volume for mail-in ballots," Hudson said. "We have a fairly good pool of volunteers right now. I think we're in really good shape." Other communities across the state don't appear to be as fortunate. Texas is preparing for a general election for which officials are expecting unprecedented turnout and unprecedented demand for election workers. Historically, elections have been staffed by older retirees, a demographic that is particularly vulnerable to the coronavirus. Travel Channel to feature haunted hotel. Experts to discuss footage from Old Park Hotel in Ballinger by Elena Edgen, published September 26th. The Old Park Hotel in Ballinger has announced it will be featured in an upcoming Travel Channel show starring Jack Osborne, son of Ozzy Osborne, and the Ghost Brothers. Fright Club, a Travel Channel 10-part series, will feature Osborne and the Ghost Brothers watching paranormal videos and discussing them before experts weigh in, according to an article by Deadline. The haunted Old Park Hotel, 107 South 6th Street, will be featured on the show, according to Dan LaFave, co-owner of the hotel with his wife, Connie LaFave. The couple was contacted by Painless Productions in Los Angeles, which was interested in the hotel's haunted happenings. "We are often contacted by producers and casting agents looking for footage or stories for shows," Connie said. "We really didn't think much of it until they told us they wanted to buy the rights to our hotel footage. At that point, we knew it was the real deal and were excited to hear about what they were putting together." As part of preparing for the show, which has since been filmed, the couple got to meet Osborne and the Ghost Brothers, Dalen Spratt, Juwan Mass, and Marcus Harvey, through Skype. The first meeting came as a surprise to the couple while recording live. "We didn't even know who to expect," Connie said. "We were friends with them on Facebook, but had never really had lengthy conversations on social media. We didn't really even know if they knew we were alive." Fright Club hasn't released their premiere schedule, but the LaFaves are eagerly awaiting to see the Ballinger Hotel hit the Travel Channel. This isn't the first time Dan LaFave has been featured on the Travel Channel. In 2019, he told his paranormal encounter in Episode 1, Season 2 of Paranormal 911. The hotel has had some big names in the paranormal investigation world visit, including Chad Lindbergh in 2019. Dan hinted at more past and present paranormal investigators visiting and more television features. "There might be other future television show prospects along the way happening at the Old Park Hotel," he said. "You just never know what or who might physically pop up there." What's next for the haunted hotel? With this latest development for the hotel, the LaFaves are continuing their plans for their fifth Hallow Scream from 7:30 p.m. to 1 a.m. October 30th and 31st. This year's theme is From the Corn and will require facial coverings and social distancing. "This one will be a lot better than the other ones, with a lot of new things to scare people with this year," Dan said. Hello Scream 5 will be a blast and a lot of fun. People can buy VIP tickets online at Old Park Hotel, O-L-D-E, parkhotel.com, and avoid the lines. Children are welcome, though the LeFaves recommend parents take responsibility for children younger than 10 years old. The couple will also take place in a panel and have a booth set at Texas Paracon in Dallas, August 13th and 14th, 2021. Their panel will include the owners of the Haunted Hill House in Mineral Wells. We will be discussing a lot about what it is like owning very haunted locations, Dan said. We will also have a booth for people to come by and talk with us. The LeFaves have owned the hotel since 2016. They are currently booking groups for 2021. We think the word of mouth element has really helped the hotel grow, Connie said. We also wanted to create a place where paranormal investigators could come and feel at home. I think the atmosphere at the hotel is unprecedented and second to none. Anyone looking to spend a night at the hotel can reach them through their website, oldparkhotel.com, or on Facebook. And here's the weekly Sunday column by Tom Green County AgriLife Extension Agent for Horticulture, Allison Watkins. Fall weather brings pests that can damage lawns. Plants in the Concho Valley are breathing a sigh of relief now that fall is here, with rain and cooler temperatures. Perennials are already popping with color, and everything is starting to look healthier, happier, and more attractive after the stress of late summer. But there are also pests to watch out for in the fall that also thrive in the cooler, wetter climate. For example, the fall army worm is a caterpillar that can quickly devastate a lawn or farm crop. They are hard to predict and come through fast, but they tend to follow fall rains. For more info, see this fact sheet at https://citybugs.tamu.edu/factsheets/landscape/lawns/ENT1007. Like the article mentions, army worm outbreaks are pretty limited and are not likely to affect an entire neighborhood or large geographical area. Their outbreaks are small in scope, but they can have a significant impact on a particular lawn they choose to feed on if there are no natural enemies around to keep their numbers down. If army worms are feasting on your lawn, try treating with spinosad or BT. Another pesky caterpillar in the fall is webworm. Webworms cover the branches that they are feeding on with webbing to protect themselves from predators. The simplest way to control them is use a long stick to tear open the webs and let the birds have their own feast. For larger trees that can't be easily reached, try a hose-end sprayer with spinosad or BT. A very common fungal disease of St. Augustine turf, take-all root rot, is also active in the fall. While symptoms may be more noticeable in the spring and summer, the disease is active in the fall, and if there is a history or suspicion of the disease, now is a good time to apply peat moss and azoxystrobin fungicide. Some examples trade names include Scott's Disease EX and Heritage. Of course, after the wonderful rain that is so refreshing to our landscape plants, weeds are also popping up more. Pre-emergent can be applied to well-established lawns to prevent cool season weeds. But don't use it if you intend to overseed with ryegrass, wildflowers, or any other newly planted seeds. Bare soil and thinned turf is an invitation for weeds, so summer-stressed lawns may see an increase in weeds. Encourage a thicker, dense lawn to outcompete weeds. For planting beds, replenish mulch to a depth of 4 inches. Broadleaf weeds can be controlled while they are still small and young with many different options of herbicide. Just be sure to use one that is labeled as safe for your particular species of lawn. Large weeds that are flowering or that have gone to seed are best pulled by hand. Allison Watkins is the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Agent for Horticulture in Tom Green County. Contact her at aewatkins@ag.tamu.edu.
Thank you for joining us for this reading of the San Angelo Standard Times. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.